close-up of our fighting front. The Golden State Company, distributors of quality dairy products and producers of Golden V vitamin milk, bring you Dean Dickerson, the man who has been around the world 20 times. A new feature designed to acquaint you with the where of the news. American fighting men are located at 65 places throughout the world, 50 of them on foreign soil. It is the hope of the Golden State Company that through these broadcasts, you will become better acquainted with the actual places where your son, brother, or friend may be stationed in the service of his country and the conditions under which he is living and fighting. Now, here is Dean Dickerson.
Good evening. Tonight, your number one choice for discussion is Tunisia. You see, it's your vote that determines which of the fighting fronts we'll talk about on this program. The news from Tunisia tonight isn't too bad. Despite heavy rain and deep mud, our troops, supported by tanks and mobile artillery, have driven to within 20 miles of Tunis. That's the capital of Tunisia, you know. Before we give you a word picture of places and conditions in this vast expanse, a word from Bob Gurner.
Of course, you're cooperating with Uncle Sam's plan to share the meat. Yet you realize that the proteins in meat must be supplied from some other source. You know that a well-balanced meal should include minerals and carbohydrates, as well as vitamins. But that's no problem for all you women who serve your family delicious Golden V vitamin milk every day. It didn't take you long to catch on to the fact that Golden V does double duty these days. You know that a single pint of Golden V vitamin milk gives you a normal adult full day's basic supply of seven essential vitamins we must have for energy. That takes care of the vitamin problem. And Golden V vitamin milk is a rich source of muscle-building proteins found also in meat. It's rich in minerals and carbohydrates found in many fruits and vegetables. In other words, you get good whole milk, the most nearly perfect of all foods, plus seven essential vitamins in every pint of Golden V vitamin milk. And Golden V costs just 22 cents a quart, 12 cents a pint at your grocer. Try it today. And now, here is Dean Dickerson and his close-up of Tunisia.
At this season, that is from now until March, there are likely to be intermittent rains throughout North Africa, with variable and frequent northwest or easterly winds. Such weather is bound to restrict our aerial activity. However, I noticed a late news bulletin as we passed through the newsroom on our way in here that reported Allied planes defying the adverse weather to lash at Axis troops in the Bizerta Tunis area. Now that's good news, for on the outcome of the battle for Tunisia hinges the fate of our whole North African campaign.
The first question from our Golden State mailbag is from Gordon Ingham of Seattle, Washington, who wants you to explain why Tunisia is so important. Mr. Ingham says he traveled with you in 1939 and insists that you ought to know.
Well, I think I do. You see, I've been to Tunisia six times in the last 18 years. I've become quite fond of the place. If you look at your map, you'll observe that Tunisia is the hump on the north coast of Africa. It's about midway between Gibraltar at the west end of the Mediterranean and the Suez Canal over at the east end. Though no larger than the state of New York, Tunisia is a land of contrast. The rugged interior is a weathered spur of the Atlas Mountains, a chain of high hills that extends for 1,300 miles. Toward Tunisia's east coast and down south toward the Sahara Desert, the mountains gradually subside. First, they merge into a plateau, then into a low, sandy desert separated from the sea by little more than a fringe of palms. A good portion of lower Tunisia, down in the south, that is away from the coast, is desolate salt marshland and sand dunes. For six centuries, Tunisia was known as Carthage, from the famous historical city founded by the Phoenicians in 850 B.C. Although then the granary of the Mediterranean world, Tunisia has never been a prize of empire because of its natural wealth. Rather, Tunisia has been coveted because of its strategic situation at almost the middle of the Mediterranean. Cape Bon is only 90 miles from Sicily. Sicily is the base from which Axis airborne troops are being carried across this narrow waste of the Mediterranean. It's Tunisia's situation, then, not its grains or its fruit or its minerals, but its location that is the prize of the battle for North Africa.
Our next question from the Golden State mailbag is from Mrs. Raymond Dell of Modesto, California. Mrs. Dell wants to know why there has been so much delay in the progress of our North African campaign, particularly since it got off to such a flying start.
Well, unless you've motored along that North African coast, as I have, all the way from Casablanca on the Atlantic to Tripoli, the capital of Libya, you just can't conjure up the problems of terrain and distance that confront our forces there. Why, do you know that from Casablanca to our fighting front in Tunisia is more than 1,000 miles? And that's as far as from San Francisco to Vancouver, B.C. Even our main base at Algiers is 370 miles from the Tunisian front. And that's as far as from San Francisco to Santa Barbara.
What port is closest to Tunisia?
The nearest port is at Boni. Boni is 120 miles west of Bizerta, or as far as from San Francisco to Monterey. However, Boni is a small port, and it's under almost constant Axis air bombardment from Sicily. The roads between Algiers and Tunis are neither numerous nor very good. The railroad is standard gauge, but its rolling stock is wholly inadequate for our military needs. Then, too, the mountainous terrain of Tunisia is ideal for defense. In fact, the terrain of all North Africa is seldom conducive to moving a large army or supplying it. And what's more important, it's the fact that Hitler can fly fighter planes and small dive bombers from almost any point on his gigantic European front to Tunisia, while we can fly only big bombers from our main bases in Algeria. In other words, though we may have plenty of bombers in Africa, we can't get in our small planes as easily as Hitler can. So not only is the terrain against us, it also takes time and ships to build up the overwhelming pursuit force that may be necessary to win through to final victory.
The Golden State mailbag yields next the question from Miss Olive Hunt of Los Angeles. Miss Hunt wants to know if you've been over the route by which Lieutenant General Kenneth Anderson led Britain's First Army into Tunisia. And if so, what's it like?
Yes, I have. I've motored through it several times. The mountain roads are narrow and tortuous. Easy targets for Stukas and their fighter escorts roaring high overhead. In western Tunisia, near the Algerian border, is the most attractive region in the protectorate. It's known as La Koumeri, from the Koumeers, a wild, turbulent people inhabiting that hill country. The mountains are cloaked in forests of cork trees. Their slopes are carpeted with sweet-smelling ferns, myrtle, and creepers. It's beautiful country, all right, but it's not a region adapted to modern blitz warfare.
The next question from our Golden State mailbag comes from Raymond D. Callahan of Reno, Nevada. Mr. Callahan would like to know something more about the peoples of Tunisia, their races, and their industries.
Well, to me, the peoples of Tunisia are its chief fascination. Of the 2,600,000 population, only a little more than 8% are European, half French, half Italian. The other 92% are mostly Muslims of Arab or Berber stock. Though many of the Arabs are nomadic shepherds living in tents and caves, the vast majority of the population clings to the towns along the coast and in the valleys, even around the larger oases in the desert. The Berbers live in baked mud houses roofed with tile. They are well-built men and are usually farmers or mechanics. And there are also 50,000 Jews in Tunisia and some 25,000 Negroes from the Sudan. The Jews are divided into two classes, the Legern Jews, originally from Legern in South Italy, and the native Jews, who are often quite poor. The Legern Jews are the bankers, the professional and businessmen. The native Jews are tailors and shoemakers. They're also embroiderers, butchers, and small shopkeepers. The Sudanese Negroes, and they're generally clad in pure white, which only accentuates their blackness, are servants, peddlers, and bakers. They're descended from slaves and are now Mohammedans, living given to superstitions all their own, also to frantic dancing and the wildest possible music.
Now, what about Tunisia's industries? Isn't the country preponderantly agricultural?
Yes, the watered areas produce hard wheat, barley, and oats, also olives, grapes, and dates. In fact, Tunisian dates are probably the world's finest. Since Tunisia is in the same latitude as California, south of Santa Cruz, that is, fruits are also plentiful. There are oranges and lemons, figs and almonds, apricots and cherries, plums and bananas, apples, peaches and pears. On the plateaus, Burnoose tribesmen shepherd their sheep and goats, their camels and horses. The austere mountains yield vast stands of oak and cork, also phosphate for fertilizer, saltpeter and iron, and there's some zinc and mercury.
What are the native bazaars we hear so much about like?
Oh, yes, I can't leave Tunisia without a word about the souk, or bazaars. There's nothing there that will fascinate our doughboys more than the souk. That is, once their master's there and can afford some well-earned leisure. In Tunis, for example, each narrow street in the old town is tenanted by merchants of the same occupation. There's a jeweler's bazaar, or market, and a perfumer's bazaar. And there's a souk for saddlers, another souk for woolen dealers, still others for silk merchants, for shoemakers and embroiderers. For the sake of the girls left behind, it's only too bad our boys didn't get into Tunis before Christmas. Now in a moment, I'll give you a close-up of Tunisia as it probably looks from a muddy foxhole in the Medjez El Bab sector. That's 25 miles southwest of Tunis. First, a word from Bob Gurner.
Much of the news these days reminds us that double duty is the slogan of the day. That's why more and more Californians are switching to delicious Golden V vitamin milk as their mealtime drink. Because here, with no two ways about it, is a double duty food. First duty, every pint of Golden V is supercharged with vitamins to give you a normal adult's full day's basic supply of 7 essential vitamins we all must have for buoyant energy and healthful well-being. Second duty, Golden V gives everyone a rich source of other healthful elements. And that's particularly important in these days of food restrictions, share the meat plans, and the like. Golden V gives you a rich source of proteins, the muscle-building element for which meat is best known. Golden V is rich in essential minerals and carbohydrates present in many fruits and vegetables. Any way you look at it, you can't beat Golden V vitamin milk as a double-duty food. It gives you 7 essential vitamins plus the healthful benefits of fine milk itself. And remember, you get all of these benefits at new low bargain prices. Order Golden V vitamin milk today. Now, back to Dean Dickerson.
Come with me in fancy while we picture the Tunisian scene as it probably is today. Imagine that you're a doughboy with Major General Charles Ryder commanding our forces in Tunisia. It's Christmas Eve. You're crouched in a slit trench in a cold, driving rain. Your rifle is cocked. You're warily watching a small wood just ahead. A German armored car scuttled into that wood a few moments ago. You're waiting for it to come out. Over to the right is a twisting valley flanked by cliffs and mountain peaks. To the left is a hillside field. Despite the rain and the hell of modern war bursting all about him, a colorfully garbed Berber is patiently tilling his rock-littered soil with an ox all about him. A colorfully garbed Berber is patiently tilling his rock-littered soil with an oxen-drawn plow. There's a series of distant reports, then a screeching overhead. A mile away, perched on the brow of a gentle hill, is a farmhouse. You decide to ease over toward it. It may be warm there, and you can still keep an eye on that cluster of cork trees. Suddenly, there's a whir of flames overhead. 2 swastika-marked Stukas appear out of nowhere. You dive back into the muddy trench. Both Stukas peel off. They roar down on the farmhouse, releasing their bombs at 700 feet. The house goes up in splinters as the explosions shake not only your teeth. And every bone, but the very mountains themselves. The Berber glances up, but goes right on plowing. Maybe it wasn't his house after all. You burrow deeper into the mud. It may be worse. You burrow deeper into the mud. It may be warmer there. Until we have more men, more equipment, more planes in North Africa, that's Tunisia as it probably is now.
Next Sunday evening at the same time...
Now.
Next Sunday evening at the same time, the Golden State Company will present Dean Dickerson's close-up of our fighting front in Burma, the scene of the latest Allied offensive. A close-up of our fighting front in Burma. The scene of the latest Allied offensive, a drive to reopen the Burma Road.
We all know that the mounting pressure on China must be relieved somehow. There's no shorter or more effective way to do it than through Burma. Ever since the Allies lost Burma last May, we've been planning its reoccupation. Any map will tell you what a difficult problem it is. On Sunday, I'll try to give you a close-up of Burma. Good night.
You've been listening to Dean Dickerson with his close-up of our fighting front. If there is a fighting front anywhere that you would like to have Dean Dickerson discuss on a future broadcast, just let him know by addressing a card or letter to Dean Dickerson, CBS.